Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Today is often called Victory Day by Lakota, Northern Cheyenne, and Arapaho people to commemorate the Battle of Greasy Grass. 145 years ago today, the 7th Cavalry, led by George Armstrong Custer, was soundly defeated by some 2,000 warriors, both men and women. Today, we'll hear the indigenous perspective of this battle from historians and descendants. We'll dive into the history right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Another unmarked gravesite has been discovered in Canada on the grounds of a former Indian residential school in Saskatchewan. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the discovery comes after the remains of 215 bodies were recently found at a school in British Columbia.
The Cowessess First Nation in Saskatchewan is about 100 miles east of Regina. Its chief, Cadmus DeLorme, describes what they found.
We started our radar penetrating research on June the 2nd of 2021. As of yesterday, we have hit 751 unmarked graves. This is not a mass grave site. These are unmarked graves.
DeLorme says the representatives of the Catholic Church removed the headstones, so today they are unmarked graves. It's not clear how many of the bodies buried on the site of the former Maryvale Indian Residential School were Native children. DeLorme says there are stories that there were adults buried there as well.
What we are going to be doing now is we are going to be putting names to these unmarked graves. We want to honor our loved ones that lay there today. We want to make sure that we keep that place and preserve it so many could come here and heal.
DeLorme says he believes the Catholic Church, which ran the school from 1898 to 1981, will hand over records from the school. He says for now his band has just one book of records from a knowledge keeper. And he says while he expects cooperation from the Catholic Church, he also wants an apology from the Pope. The chief of the Federation of Sovereign Indian Nations, Bobby Cameron, says searches of residential school grounds across the country will continue, as well as sanatoriums of Indian hospitals and any sites where people were taken and abused, tortured, neglected, and murdered. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Descendants of the Wounded Knee Massacre, tribal leaders, members of the National Buffalo Soldiers Association, and some members of Congress took part in a ceremony Friday in Washington, D.C. Descendants of Buffalo Soldiers, African American Cavalry, presented a proclamation showing their support for the Remove the Stain Act, legislation to revoke medals of honor awarded to soldiers for their participation in the 1890 massacre of Lakota people on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Speakers touched on reconciliation and acknowledging past wrongs. Manny Ironhawk is a descendant of the Wounded Knee Massacre.
We have to have healing. We need healing. For 130 years, we carried this from generation to generation. My mother read the story, tells the story, and she cries. And so I said, someday it needs to stop. And with the help of all of our allies and our brothers here, we have hope. Hope for our children and grandchildren to continue and remember what happened at Wounded Knee.
Representative Kai Kahele says he was honored to reintroduce the Remove the Stain Act in the House.
As a proud veteran, a 20-year veteran and a member of the House Armed Services Committee, the Medal of Honor is the most prestigious and the highest award and recognition that the United States military bestows on those that have served. And make no mistake, there was nothing, absolutely nothing honorable about the actions of those soldiers.
Legislation was also reintroduced in the Senate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination provided by the Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health, which supports this show. Vaccines are now available for everyone 12 and up. Talk with your provider today about protecting your children and family from COVID-19.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Sherwood-Dui. Thousands of Cheyennes, Arapahoes, Dakota, and Lakotas united to defeat the U.S. Army's 7th Cavalry in the Battle of Greasy Grass. Today is the 145th anniversary of the fight that unfolded near the Little Bighorn River in Montana, and it's one of the most famous battles of the so-called Indian Wars. It was this combat that led to the demise of George Armstrong Custer, as well as the men he led into battle. Today we're going to learn more about this battle and what led up to it from the Indigenous perspective. For example, there was a Sundance before the battle where Sitting Bull had a vision of soldiers falling out of the sky like grasshoppers. We'll also hear about the women involved in the battle, and we'll get the Crow perspective on Crow Scouts that served under Custer at the time of the battle. And we want to hear from you. What do you want to say about the Battle of Greasy Grass or the Battle of the Little Bighorn, as it's also listed in history? Phone lines are open now. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And here with us today on the line out of Medicine Tail, Montana, is Jim Railbird, and he is with the Little Bighorn Reenactment. And in 2022, it'll be called Custer's Reride Show. And he is Absaluga, or Crow, and he is of the Big Lodge Clan and a child of the Whistling Water Clan. Our pleasure to have him here with us, Jim. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Oh, yeah. Good day. Thank you.
Good day to you. And Jim, where you are right now is very significant to the day and in our discussion today. So just tell folks a little bit about what you're about to witness and be a part of.
So right now, can you hear me good without the wind? I'm sitting with my back against the TV on the south side. So I'm looking towards the Wolf Mountains, where the lookout was during the day of the battle, and we've seen into the valleys from the Wolf. Oh, probably about 18 miles away, and they're blue, and then you get to the greasy grass country, and it's all brown, so there's that distance is making a change. So I'm sitting where probably some Minneconju had their camp the day of the battle, and TB I'm leaning against right now is part of the scene for the show today at 1 o'clock.
And thinking about this is the anniversary, 145 years ago, of everything that was going on that ground right now. For you, Jim, what do you remember?
I always say that there's nothing that's going to be not from this land. Everything, the healing comes from this land that I'm sitting on right here. Gonna give you the plants to enter into healing, to go into that cycle of your life. So that's part of what we do here with the issues of the day are left outside of our boundaries right here. And when you come on this land, if you actually walk barefoot on this land or walk on elk soles or buffalo sole moccasins, it'll talk to you. It'll start healing you. And that's what all this, we provide a chance for all these visitors everywhere from Australia, England, anywhere. They come here and they experience that heart. It's a relationship with the land. It's what it is today.
Yes, it's very special land to be standing on, and I've been on that land and felt it. So I feel you, Jim. Thank you for sharing that with us today. And the reenactment, explain to folks what happens and what your hopes are, what people walk away with after seeing this in action.
Well, one of the basic things that we're our family, we grew up being around livestock, horses mainly, and we've had, you know, we traveled with the racehorses and the bucking horses and all that stuff, and then we got over that part, and then we present this horse event. It's mostly anybody can do a production somewhere on some property, but our stage is about 10 acres with the Little Bighorn River twisting through here in the middle of our stage, and we'll have a scene where we'll have about 60 to 70 wild bucking horses that we raise. They'll be part of our show, and we have warriors that ride bareback like they did before, and they're good riders. If you're not a good rider, you're not part of the show, even on the cavalry side. You're good enough to, if you're riding fast, jumping off the banks and going across the river and stuff, you won't really make it in the show. You can do other slow activities somewhere. This place is about riding horses. That's our main presentation.
Sure, and there's a lot of good riders there, especially those Indian relay riders. Boy, some good stuff. And Jim, the story that gets told through the people who are there and what they're being asked to remember or maybe even learn about for the first time, especially from an Indigenous point of view, tell me a little bit about the history that gets shared during the reenactment.
So our story starts with my grandpa Mark Reelbert. His friend was Pat Spotted Wolf, a Northern Cheyenne, and Pat's dad was part of the battle here. And so what Pat heard, he knew, shared with my grandpa Mark Reelbert, and my brother Henry Reelbert wrote this script here from what he heard as a young man and listening to Pat and my grandpa Mark talking. So that's how this the basic thing is from the Spotted Wolf version of that June the 25th, 1876. And it's more like when there was no, it was just all native tribes here on the land, and, you know, going through their different, following their different river valleys and going in a cycle through the mountains and coming back through here, through the Powder River, Rosebud, Bighorn, Little Bighorn, Yellowstone, Missouri, and all. They traveled along these different bands of Indians. And then we finally get into the mountain, and we're the first white people coming through Montana, Lewis and Clark, and then the Christianity with Father DeSchmidt coming through here. And then we have the, after that, then they started looking for gold. The miners started coming in and just taking over, digging up the land, and just, and that was when the issue started with the gold. So then it ends with the battle.
And Jim, what role did the Crow play in the battle?
We were part of the U.S. Cavalry Scout with Rickaross and I don't know, some other few other bands of tribes that were working with Lewis and Clark before that. And so some bands, like not all bands of the Crow, were affiliated with the U.S. government. Just like my family, we're not part of the U.S. government as of today, because when my brother Richard was a chairman, the government sent him away to prison for 2.5 years for starting filing what today is known as the Cabell case. My brother Richard filed that against the U.S. government in 1887, and he got sent to prison. Government attacked him, but my grandfather was Richard Wallace. He never worked for the government. And we're the same way today. We don't live in government houses. We live on our own. We make a living off of our own private land we have. So, but like I said, some people were with the government, like the different tribes that are like the Bureau of Indian Affairs today. All those tribal Indians that work for Bureau of Indian Affairs, they're just like the scouts in 1876. So we were government employees before there was government employees, I guess, some bands of the Crow.
And so, Jim, I know you got to get back to the reenactment. And is there anything you really want people to understand about what people were facing? You know what? We got to go to break here. So hang tight. I want you to let people know your thoughts on that. And we're going to carry on this conversation today. Again, if you want to join us, we sure hope you will dial in. Today, we are taking a look at the Battle of Greasy Grass. Maybe that's how you knew it. What did your elders tell you about it? Maybe there are some firsthand stories that got passed down through your own family. This history is important. The indigenous history, the story that comes from our relatives too, are extremely important. Hopefully, you'll dial in and share what was shared straight up in your family. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I say it that way because we know there is definitely a distortion in history about how events occurred. And of course, the roles that we played as Indigenous people in those stories. Set the record straight if you'd like. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? Maybe you know it as the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Maybe you've studied this in school. You're hearing an Indigenous perspective on all this today. If you have any thoughts to add, we sure hope you'll call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And right now, we are connected directly to the battlefield with one of our guests. So anything you want to share today, we sure hope you'll dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is this number to reach us. And why do we need to make sure we understand the full history of this time? Phone lines are open. Go ahead, give us a ring. Strawberries are a culturally significant food for many Native communities. They're symbolic of the heart and are carriers of origin stories, medicine, and good teachings. They grow wild in much of the country and make frequent appearances in gardens and kitchens across Native America. It'll be sweet, sweet strawberries on the next Native America Calling.
As COVID-19 vaccines are becoming available, Americans are eager to learn more, but frustrated about where to find answers. That's why AARP is working to protect Americans 50+ by connecting you to the latest information. You can learn who's eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine in your state, when, where, and how to get it, and what you might want to discuss with your doctor at aarp.org/vaccineinfo. AARP supports this program.
Thank you for tuning in today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about something that happened 145 years ago today. Today, June 25th, 1867. You might know it as the Battle of Greasy Grass, maybe even the Battle of the Little Bighorn, or maybe even Custer's Last Stance. However you know it, I think opens up how you connect to the history of all of this too. And so today we're giving you a moment to share some thoughts with us as we think about those who live through this moment. And we know there's a lot of descendants who tune into this program and sure hope you will call in too and share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. With us today out of Medicine Tail, Montana is Jim Realbird, and he is with the Little Bighorn reenactment, and he is Absalaga or Crow. Thank you for being here with us today, Jim. And Jim, just thinking about what occurred on this day 145 years ago, and you think of the people who were there, the indigenous people as well, and what they went through, and your thoughts, especially seeing this reenactment and seeing the braves on the horses go through, you know, and even reenacting, you know, the day of the battle. What do you think of the lives they were living and why moments like this happened?
So if you were here, you had a good life, you know. Only Malaywi lakpag ya itcha ina abay again Malaywi lakpag. Our life is good if you're standing on this ground. The only ones that are not doing good today are the ones that are not with us anymore. So no matter what, na Malaywi lakpag ish, these akusish a mosh a bahimish. Na a wish, a bolegushish, kal you wanted for kalachted, is a kussish, for shabidush, balagush, itcha a kugan to a kali dance ashta, what dance ashta, dance ashta, what it is the dalali. The only way that we can be people is to speak our language. And as a crow, when you speak your language, there's more love for your people. There's more love for your brothers, other tribes. So, and today, if you were here, you would know that these people are not here of something that happened to them, or they're here in the present today, and the air is different. So one of the things that we provide here, and that was here because of the village of 1876 that was sitting right here where I'm at right now, is it still goes on, that spirit of unity, of peace, and our way of life, our vision, and all of that stuff. Malaywawashilish, Malayowyosh, Basawush, Amachpish. How sacred the land is, why this place is still the way it is. You can't say, I think it was 145 years ago. It's like, I feel like I'm not, it's not 145. It's still the same today. I can still see the TV poles, and I can still see the horses grazing over there and stuff. So me, I still have that peace of, I didn't lose my culture. My grandpa never had short hair. I remember in 1960s, my grandpa Mark, he had three braids and he wore a bridge cloth. Even though he wore pants, regular pants like today, he wore a bridge cloth. He never wore like regular underwear like you buy at the store. And he spoke the language. So, Nawabagoi Amalevi Nakhpagish. Our brothers, my sisters, everybody, we all speak our language today. I'm a big lodge, so I have respect for my brothers. I'm a Whistling Water child, and I have my uncles are the Whistling Waters, and they take care of me no matter what, spiritually, physically, any way. So it's still with our family right here. I just heard thunder, so I think it's a good sign today. We got a thunderstorm. Do you hear it?
I think I do. Thank you for that, Jim. Hands up to the sky. Thank you for that one. And Jim, before we let you go, we need to know our history as Native people. We need to go to the people in our communities too and hear the history. And if we're rich enough to have the history being passed down first person, well, we need to take a moment, open our ears big. Anything you want to share about why we need to think of this history and think of our ancestors, especially on days where it was the hardest?
Yeah, they'll bring you back to the land. All the ways are here. All the plants are here to help us. But you won't know it if you're looking at your phone and turning your air conditioner on in your car. just like me, I told you, I have to be outside right on June 25th, 2021. Man, I'm sitting out here. It couldn't be better. So you have to go back to the land. Take your shoes off. Go to the Sundance. Go to the Sweat Lodge. It's not my, I always say this, it's not my responsibility to teach my son and my daughter's Crow language. It's not my responsibility. I'm responsible to speak my language. And everyone is, I can't carry my kids and I can't carry my nephews. They have to learn it themselves. And that's why we're kind of losing it, because we thought we were responsible to carry our language. It's not my responsibility. It's the person that doesn't know. The ones that don't speak their language, they're responsible to learn it, not me. I pray in Crow language. First thing I do, I pray in Crow language every morning, drink water and stuff. So that's the kids, the people. You're responsible for what you're going to do starting at age 12. You know what you want to do. Some kids want to be bronc riders earlier than that. And if you want to learn the Crow, you want to keep the Crow language alive, it's your responsibility. So,
well, thank you for that, Jim Rilbert. Thank you. We appreciate you being here, and we know you're here too, and we want to hear from you. And I think that goes to many of our listeners. When we think of things we were taught in school, how does that align with what we know to be true in our family? Maybe some of these firsthand accounts, a firsthand account of what happened at the Battle of Greasy Grass. We want you to open up that space for us today. We are taking a look at history through an indigenous lens, and how much of that has been missing, maybe even big moments in your own tribe's history. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We are calling on your knowledge, your stories. We hope you'll call in and share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's go ahead and take a call. We have Melvin, who is in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Melvin, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Oh, good morning. I just want to pay honor to Iqbaduta, one of our greatest warriors, who was there with his band at the Greasy Grass. He was a great warrior. He was chased for over 25 years. Never caught. He escaped into Canada. And that's where his family is today. But I just wanted them to know about Iqbaduta, who was chased by thousands of soldiers. He lost family members, but he fought on, and he was one of the Dakota's greatest warriors.
Thank you for remembering this relative there in Santee community, Mr. Melvin. Thank you for giving us a ring. Join us too. Maybe there's a relative you would like to say their name today, or remember somebody who taught you all about all this. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here too, out of Laramie, Wyoming, we have Dr. Jeffrey Means. He is an associate professor in the Department of History and American Studies at the University of Wyoming, and he is Oglala Lakota. Dr. Means, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling, and I know you go by Jeff. So Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Tara. It's great to be here.
And so an important day in history for many people. And Jeff, I want to go back to something that Jim shared about what he's feeling on that land, where this took place, of unity. And there was a huge unity that happened among the Lakota and other allies at that moment. And As I learned more about this time in history and all the people who came to that area, before there was even a battle, there was an important moment of where people came together. Many teepees were erected there, and I can only imagine the moments that were happening when so many people were together And we hear that there were many songs that were shared before the battle. And there was a lot of good connectivity among the different folks there. And before we get into what people love to jump to, the guns, the fighting, the killing, let's remember that moment. Anything you want to share about that, Jeff?
Yeah, it was a tremendous time for that. I mean, they had just held a Sundance, which, is the most sacred ceremony of the Lakota. And that's just a real uniting kind of a ceremony. It's all about, you know, sacrificing for God and that kinship with God. And it just solidifies your place within the nation and with one another. And it really builds that, you know, that solid identity of you know, who you are and who you're a part of. And so, you know, this Sundance, had just recently happened. And this is where Sitting Bull gets his, you know, he goes off to pray at the Deer Medicine Rock. And he has that vision of, them defeating Custer and, you know, these soldiers dropping out of the sky. And they don't have ears. They're not going to hear. They're all upside down, so they're all dead. He also had that vision where we weren't supposed to touch the bodies afterwards or something bad would happen. But, you know, it's these kinds of things that really bring the whole nation together. And so really just a great time of feeling strong and about who you are and who you belong to. So, you know, it couldn't have been a worse time for the Washichus to show up.
Yeah, they were at a very important moment. And, you know, Jeff, as I think back of all of these ancestors and the things that happened before, you know, this infamous day in history, and they were even victorious before this battle took place. And I just always think of those people and what was going through their mind and especially being able to fill this moment with all of the years of the pressure that was put on by the U.S. government and the things they were going to, and hearing of Sitting Bull's vision drew people to that area. And, you know, these were very hard times of people who left some of these places where they were not given good food, where they were treated really bad. And so you think of everything that they were enduring at that time, and to have this one moment or this time period where they pushed back. And I think that's really interesting. And I mirror a lot of it to that one day in December at Standing Rock, when the papers were signed to put a halt to things from the Obama administration. And that moment that I heard in that camp that day, fireworks going off, of that one moment where people felt what it meant to not feel all of that dark that was thrown upon our nations. And I think back to this time as I learned more about it. Jeff, what about you?
Oh, absolutely. When even as a kid, when I thought about the Battle of Little Bighorn or Greasy Grass, it instilled pride, pride in who I was, pride in my people, because we had, you know, risen up and said no to the U.S. expansion. That dark cloud that you talk about, I mean, it had been covering Native Americans from the East Coast for so long and moving west. And, for the Lakota, you know, they had just literally fought Red Cloud's War from 1866 to 68. So just, you know, they had just signed the second treaty of Fort Laramie, 8 years before the Little Bighorn. And been promised the Black Hills and all of this land in, you know, the western half of South Dakota, parts of North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska. All of this land was going to be theirs, and the Northern Cheyenne, Northern Arapaho, et cetera. And, you know, that victory had instilled a lot of pride. They'd shut down the Bozeman Trail. They'd, you know, stopped the U.S. from building those forts, and they were all burned after the victory. And they signed this new treaty. And it, you know, it's still at the height of Native Plains power during this time. And the discovery that, well, there was they used to call it the Great Depression before that. We actually had a real Great Depression, but in 1873, the U.S. had a massive financial crisis that actually started in Europe and kind of moved to the U.S. And the way they wanted to, you know, the experts back then said, how do we fix this? Well, you need to find more, you know, gold and silver. And the rumors of gold in the Black Hills had been around since the early 1800s. And, you know, Custer came in illegally in 1874 and found gold in the Black Hills. And, you know, all this is just because the United States is in a financial crisis. And, you know, the thinking of that assimilationist and settler colonial mindset of the U.S., they were, you know, so assured that and believed so fully that all this land was theirs, that it was like, we know, you know, if we turn the light switch on, it'll go on, and the sun will rise in the morning. I mean, they just knew they were better than everyone else, and they didn't have any doubt about their superiority. And so,
you know what, Jeff, you got to pause right there, because I think we have a lot more to cover. Too bad we only have an hour today, but, you know, if you want to get in on this, you got to give us a ring right now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And I'll toss that question to you. How important is it that we know what was going on between major moments in history? Give us a ring. Phone lines are open. Call now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about the Battle of the Little Bighorn today, or you might call it the Battle of Greasy Grass, or you might even call it Victory Day. What do you know about the battle? What were you taught? And what are you learning today, hearing what we're talking about? Give us a ring right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Dr. Jeffrey Means is with us today out of Laramie, Wyoming, who is an associate professor in the Department of History and American Studies at the University of Wyoming. He is Oglala Lakota. Our pleasure to have him here. And Jeff, the phone lines are lighting up. We'll go to them in a minute, but go ahead. Finish your thought.
I kind of lost track. I think I was at Custer illegally in the Black Hills. And so what basically the United States decided it wanted the Black Hills for gold. The United States tried to get the Lakota to sell them the Black Hills. The Lakota wouldn't sell them the Black Hills. And so with that failure, the president at the time, Ulysses S. Grant, basically created a situation that led to war. He wanted this conflict so that he would have a justification for taking the Black Hills and therefore getting his hands on the gold. And that's, you know, kind of what led up to this act of betrayal, really, by the United States government after just signing that treaty. You know, because they just wanted the gold, and they didn't think the Lakota deserved to have it. So I'll just end there. What else you want to know about?
I want to know a lot more. Let me take a call before we do. We got Tom in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Tom, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Oh, Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening there to everybody. I just want to let you guys know out there in waves out there that Wounded Knee, we've been celebrating Little Bighorn for the past 9 years. We honor our elders. We always remember Crazy Horse, and this year we're honoring our veterans. We start off with the prayer walk to the, where the mass grave is at, and then we talk about Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse's techniques, his skills, his life. We have elders that share that story among our youth here. And then at the noon, we celebrate with a meal with our elders. We share a prayer with the elders. Then in the afternoon, we have these activities for our kids, our youth. Tournaments, volleyball, dodgeball, horseshoe, and then we're going to honor our veterans, all veterans, no matter what you did, no matter how you served that flag will always belong to the women, because it was the women that picked up that flag after Little Bighorn. The women are the keepers and builders of our sacred nations. That's something we always teach our children here. But the one main thing we always teach our kids here is to remember Lakota, the tongue. It is Waka. Waka means alive. Doesn't mean sacred. Waka means it's alive. So we always emphasize on learning the tongue, because if we don't have the tongue, we don't have no culture. But I just wanted to say, whoever's all celebrating this day, I thank you, because it needs to be a federal holiday, because it was a defeat that the United States can still not stand up to us on this day. They don't like it. But Hechutse, Lakota na Dakota na Nakota na Machpiatona, ina yuha lecha apete yokpia yohapcha. Hechutse ho hechutu alo. You all have a good, happy victory day. Ho, Tashuka witko, Tashuka witko, Tashuka witko, Tashuka witko. Ho, hechutu wopila.
And thank you to Tom there in Wounded Knee, South Dakota. We now go to Candace, who is in Thunder Valley, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Thank you for giving us a ring, Candace. You're on air. All right, give us a ring back, Candace. Oh, you still there? Go ahead. You're on air.
Yes, I am. Yes, I agree with Tom from Wounded Knee, Anderson, South Dakota. This day is Victory Day, and I want to to that because of all of our ancestors. Every year for the last 25 years, we've been honoring this day, and we do our sun dances. We do our sun dances in honor of our ancestors who brought us here. We're all happy that today was Victory Day. Our hills, our Black Hills, are not for sale. They've never been, ever. And that land there is not our land. It's not white land. It is sacred land that we go to pray on. So our ancestors are here today. So we honor all of that every year for the last 5 years, because that's what we believe in. So our Wopila, thank you. Thank you.
Candace, thanks for your call. We now go to Shell, who is in Fort Hall, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Shell, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hello. Yeah. When Crazy Horse rode over to the eastern side of the battle, the battle was going uphill. He led, you know, his followers, and he was the first one. And he rode right through the 7th Cavalry, and as he was going through, you know, full speed, he slapped Custer and just kept on going through, and the younger ones and all the other the bands that were with him, they just overran the parts of the 7th Cavalry right from that direction. And so when Sitting Bull, he was according to his great grandson, he was in his lodge in his teepee with swollen arms, because he gave him flesh offerings, and his arms, his body was all swollen. And the tribes to the west, you know, the cavalry didn't, you know, when he fled to Canada, they didn't want them gathering together. So, you know, they laid down three war shirts and they asked, you know, which worship do you follow? And they pointed to the west and the northwest and the southwest, you know, depending on which shirt they pointed at. And, you know, like an older guy told me that it's not written in any books or anything like that.
Wow. And you know what? There are a lot of things like that that rest within our families, and these stories are important. They were left out of the history books, and so we're giving you the space to share it today. If you would like to call in, we sure hope you'll dial 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Shell, good to hear your voice. Thank you for your call there out of Fort Hall, Idaho. And Jeffrey, I definitely want to, you know, have a moment to talk about the role that the women played in all of this too. But before we move forward, we do have to recognize all of the lives that were lost at this battle on both sides, even the people who served in the military. And I'd like you to just put this in perspective, Jeff, that when we talk about this, and as you hear people calling in, celebrating a moment in time where good was felt in a tribe, well, tragedy was also happening. It's a very mixed thing. We even had a caller or our guest at the beginning of the hour from the Absalaga Crow Nation. And there's contention between tribes about this moment, about this battle. And Jeff, I'm going to toss that to you. You know, thinking about all of this, it's complicated. There's a lot. You hear people, you heard it in the voices that we just heard call in, that pride and making sense of all of this and not wanting to be disrespectful to anybody. Is there anything you'd like to address, you know, given all of that said? Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I first of all, I just thank Tom and Candace and, you know, all the callers, you know, it is a very exciting time for the Lakota. Today is a day of celebration. It's a victory day. So, yeah, I love those phone calls. I'm so excited. And even for Melvin earlier talking about Ink Paduta, you know, that guy, white people in Minnesota used to scare their children at night and tell them, if you don't go to sleep, Ink Paduta is going to get you. So, this is all great. And again, this is the kind of thing that makes you feel proud. But like you said, you know, it's a really sad time too, because, you know, about 150 natives lost their lives and over 250 Americans lost their lives. And, you know, that's never good. That's always a bad day. It was a great victory and a real kind of, you know, moment of light. But we've got to remember that after that, you know, things got pretty bad, because the United States obviously couldn't just sit down on that. They had to do something about it. So then, you know, they cut off rations, they sent out the armies again, and it was just bad after that. So it's great to celebrate victory, though, but, yeah, you know, the sadness of all those lives lost, you know, that's a big part of it, because, you know, most Native people would always rather be peaceful. You know, peace is better than war, but, you know, when you got the United States involved and, you know, even before that, the Europeans, it just, war is, you know, something that comes out of all this colonization. So, yeah, I appreciate what you say about, you know, remembering that it's also a solemn day too.
And with that, please, let's go into also the role that women played in all of this. And a lot of times that's left out of the history. And, you know, we even have beautiful stories like that of Buffalo Calf Road Woman. Anything you want to share about the women and their part in all of this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, should be noted that, you know, unlike Western, you know, Anglo culture, women in Native culture could fight if they wanted or do anything they wanted. And it wasn't culturally unacceptable, that kind of thing. But at this battle, there's at least a couple of women, if not more, that really picked up weapons and fought alongside the men and distinguished themselves. Buffalo Calf Road Woman was a Northern Cheyenne woman, the one you mentioned, and she saved her brother, Chief Comes in Sight, at Rosebud, earlier at the Battle of Rosebud, but then at Greasy Grass, she fought alongside her husband, Black Coyote. And, you know, the stories say that she pulled Custer off his horse. She was the one who dehorsed him there, you know. I don't know, you know, and that's oral history. Again, that's not something that's in the books. So, and then you've got a Lakota woman, a Hunk Papa Lakota woman, moving robe woman, whose brother was killed. One Hawk, he was killed, and so she, you know, that's part of that sadness. She took his place in battle, and she ended up killing two soldiers, one with a knife and one with a pistol. And, you know, these are the kind of acts that Native women commonly did, you know. I mean, tremendous courage, tremendous bravery and care about their culture and protecting everything about it. So it was really a huge moment for Native women too, you know, alongside the men.
And Jeffrey, we have a couple of minutes, and I guess we're going to leave them on a cliffhanger on this one about the moment where they interacted with Custer. There are all kinds of accounts of that moment. Where, you know, it went down in history. And even at the time, it was real interesting to read the newspaper reports of what happened. And is there anything that you understand to be what happened or any of the accounts you've heard of what happened at that moment or anything more to share?
You know, I don't think it's vitally important, and this is kind of against my nature as a historian because we're always looking for, you know, what really happened. You know, like a lot of oral history, you know, the facts aren't as important as the message, as you know, the idea that came from it. And, you know, archaeological evidence seems to show that, yes, it was Crazy Horse and his charge that finished off the 7th Cavalry in one pretty much, you know, one moment, even though the battle lasted for 6 hours, from 3 in the afternoon till 9 at night when it got dark. So, you know, it's not so much that, oh, here are the facts and what you say is wrong because it doesn't agree with it. It's, you know what? Let's take the message from the moment. And it was one of victory and hope and unity. So that's what I'd like people to take away from this today.
Thank you for that. And, you know, something I heard from Joseph Marshall talking about all this is just to remind, this is a big reminder that where people were fighting to keep their way of life going. And I think that's another big lesson that we learn all of this. And we see where that came from because there are many different Native nations today who are still standing and have their histories. And as we heard from two individuals on this hour today, have the language and why the language is important and how it weaves into all of this. A lot learned today, so much more to be discussed when we talk about this day. The significant day in history, and there is still more to be shared. We sure hope you'll continue to reach out to us and share some of this history, maybe something that isn't in a book, something that your elders taught you, or a leader in your community that you know about this day. We sure hope you'll do that. You can always reach out to us, comments at nativeamericacalling.com. And thank you to both of our guests, Jim Realbird and Dr. Jeffrey Means. We're back on Monday with another lineup, or kicking off another lineup, a great show, starting with a discussion on strawberries and how they connect to our nations. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Nola Days Moses is a distribution director. And Bob Peterson is a network manager, both for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our resource development specialist. Antonio Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations and president and CEO of Kwanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We sure hope you'll meet us here on Monday for another discussion. And if you missed anything today, you can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Gugtash, moi jabam nyeg, amo hachi ag mapamas chadim achichiga. Amo ha yeg kakadam haki mamakai ma abam nya am baitis machim. O moi hachichiga am healthcare.gov. O aboy ha gugad am hamako gigik sikos sikos waik hamako gigik gok watas homok chud. Edob am yudhim ak Centers for Medicare, kich Medicaid hachipka.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.